Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at EPLRoundtable@gmail.com. All right, now we are here doing a Crystal Palace season review. Joining us is Jay, who you may know over from the Eagles Beak, at the Eagles Beak on Twitter. He also hosts the Meridian Sports Show on Meridian FM. Jay, absolute pleasure to have you back on. We're going to start off with the most recent occurrence, which was the 2-0 win over West Brom. What was your view of that match?
Hello, Kev. Great to be back on the podcast. End of the season, both teams had nothing to play for, really. No, that's a lie, actually, because Palace had a chance of finishing 10th in the table, which is incredible considering where we came from. West Brom obviously came to Selhurst, already relegated, unfortunately, and a shout-out to Dan from the formerly Baggies Facts website. We started his podcast a fair time ago at the same time, and it's a shame to see West Brom go. Mm. It's probably one of the clubs that we have a lot of time for, actually, on the podcast, and both, you know, interacting with West Brom fans through the Eagles Beak as well. So,
a lot of people party sympathies.
Yeah, well, there were actually during the game there was a few Pulis and Pardew songs which both sets of fans joined in with, which was quite quite funny. You know what the football fans' humour is like; it's a little bit different to most people. But that was a funny touch. But as for the game, I mean, Palace took a while to kind of break down a stubborn West Brom side. They've been playing well, really, under their caretaker boss, Darren Moore. Interesting to see if they do appoint him, for their championship campaign for next season. I think I could probably do a lot worse, as I've known before. But Palace kind of kept going, played some really good football. I mean, the squad of players that we've had this season are a talented bunch, and Loftus-Cheek once again played very well. The last three or four games, he's just come back from injury. He's really set the tone. And obviously, he's been rewarded with a call up to the England squad today, which, for me, watching Loftus-Cheek play this season, I thought he had a large time out injured. But we know from his debut against Germany in that friendly at Wembley that he got man a match and really gave something England something a little bit different. And we've seen that from him. He did this in this game against West Brom. He is a strong player, very skillful, plays with a ball very close to his feet and doesn't lose it very often, and kind of glides past two or three players and makes up ground very quickly, which is a real bonus for a team like Palace, and obviously to any team, really. Whether we'll actually have a chance to sign him across the summer, probably unlikely. I think he's going back to Chelsea to potentially have a chance of getting that side, and there's no reason they could have done with him this season, to be honest. But it's been great to have Loftus-Cheek with us. Just unfortunately missed a fair bit of time, but with him linking up very well with Wilf Zaha as usual, also Andros Townsend in the midfield with MacArthur and Kumbay, we really turned on a star and ended up winning 2-0 against West Brom side, obviously already relegated, a bit down in their luck as well, but been playing well recently and got some good results. But great atmosphere for the Palace fans, really celebrated Roy Hodgson, obviously being a local lad, and coming in to do a real job for us. And there's a real connection there, and it's a bit more of a kind of a celebration after what's been a long, stressful season. But we will come on to that. But yeah, a really good performance to sign out for the summer, and a job well done by both Hodgson management staff and also the players as well.
Yeah, on the season, you actually end up in 11th, only on goal difference. You end on the same level of points as Newcastle with 44, which is incredible considering your struggles at the beginning of the season. What happened with the Frank de Boer experiment, obviously bringing in Hodgson. But then you also faced one of the most intense injury crises I've ever seen in any sport. Let's focus on that last one first here. Just what was that like, kind of suffering through that as multiple players suffered long-standing injuries all around the same time?
Frustrating. I mean, we had a chat on the podcast before we played you guys, and we were going into that game with, I think it's about 13 squad players out injured. I say squad players, we're talking about players that could start in the first team legitimately. And that included a partially fit goalkeeper who had a back spasm before in the week leading up to the game. I mean, starting the season like we did and then going into what was, I think Roy Hodgson explained it as the worst injury crisis he's experienced in his management career. And obviously, goodness, that's such a long management career, isn't it? Somebody of his calibre and length in the game saying something like that really does say an awful lot. We did have a similar injury crisis a few years ago under Alan Pardew, which was a lot more to do with strains and muscle fatigue and things like that. But the injuries we suffered this year, majority of them were impact injuries. And broken ankles, knee injuries, you know, they weren't hamstring pulls or groin pulls. They were significant injuries. And it proved difficult at some points to see where we were going to go or where we were going to come back from, you know, suffering, you know, losses like that. And obviously at the same time, losing games. But on the flip side, you know, it has given us one real shining light from this season is Aaron Wan-Bissaka, who made his debut for Palace through sheer not having amount of numbers to turn out. And it's great to have a youth player actually come through and do what he's done. And I think going into next season, he's going to be the real shining light that we'll take from this season.
Yeah, I want to stick on Zaha, who clearly was a massive factor for you this season. I think it ended the year still that you did not win a match without him, unless I missed a result somewhere. He did end up playing up front a lot due to Benteke's issues, and we'll get to him in a second. But for Wilfried Zaha, what do you think his best role is at Crystal Palace, and are you confident that he will remain at the club through the summer?
I think Roy deserves, he's been a lot of plaudits have been sent Roy's way during this season, obviously during this campaign and still has climbed up the table. But I think one of the things that he has done is kind of give Zaha a bit more of a free rein. Now, normally managers were seeing him as a winger, out and out winger, target the touchline, you know, do that role, skillful player, up and down touchline and pinging the crosses. Under Hodgson, he's kind of been used a little bit differently in that not to be that player that hugs the touchline all the time. Give him a bit more freedom to come inside. And we've seen that through the goals he's scored this season. I mean, he scored one against West Ham where he cut inside and beat a couple of players and slotted it in. And it was injury time and it sent the crowd into pandemonium. But that is just what Zaha can do. Obviously, he had that ill-fated stint at United. Personally, it's too early in his career for him to go and you know, be a success at United. It's just unfortunate, I think, combination of things. You know, Alex Ferguson signed him, then retired. And it's a well-known fact that Zaha was Ferguson's last signing before he actually retired. And obviously, you know, David Moyes inherited him and it kind of didn't work out from there. We're seeing the best we've ever seen from Wilf. He's kind of grown into a player that we always hoped he would be. We're thankful that we got him back from United at a point that we did. He looked a very different player when he came back from United, a very real loss of confidence, and it took him a while to kind of get that back. But he's that sort of player that will excel in the role he's in at the moment, a big fish in a small pond. Whether he will be tempted to go and do that somewhere else, another big club like United, it remains to be seen. But for us this season, he's been invaluable. And as you rightly said, Kev, we've not actually won a game when he's not played, and he's had two spells out injured. Obviously, didn't help Frank de Boer, him being injured in the Huddersfield game, the first game of the season. He missed the following four or five games. And then there was a stint later on in the season where he was one of those 13 players that were injured at a certain point in time. So we have relied on him an awful lot. But on the flip side, him playing in our side does take a lot of players out of the other team, because a lot of time you see two or three players on him, and it does give the other players the freedom to be able to do what they want to do without so much of the attention that Wilf gets. He's been incredible. Player of the season, I would say by far this season it's not quite as by far as last season, because Luka Milivojevic has been absolutely superb for us in midfield this season. Obviously, as well, you know, Kevy's been a great fancy option for people, scoring goals both from the spot and you know, from free play as well. But Wilf has been absolutely fantastic. Like I say, he's in the best form of his life. It's just a real shame that we're not going to see him at the World Cup, either for England or Ivory Coast, who he's chosen to play for now. Really, I think England could have really done with a player of his calibre. He's in the same mould as Raheem Sterling. Perhaps I would be bold enough to say that he's better than Sterling. I really would. Just from seeing Wilf week in, week out, and seeing what he does, and the close attention he has, like a lot of you know, the popular players in the Premier League, I think he is that player, that one player outside the top six that a lot of teams will be looking at in the summer. And hopefully we'll be able to keep him. And he's saying all the right things, but you just never know in football, do you? You really don't. But just praying that he stays for at least another season. And we can build on what we've achieved, you know, in terms of a finish under Roy and go forward for next season.
That is quite a shout, saying that Zaha is better than Sterling. But either way, England certainly could have used both of them had they not kind of messed around with Zaha during his development cycle. As we mentioned, he did play up front some at the detriment of Christian Benteke, although it was Benteke's detriment to the team somewhat that opened that spot up for Zaha. Curious as to hear what you made of Benteke's season and if you think there's more value in keeping him or potentially selling him.
Had a poor season. There's probably a lot of reasons behind why he's had a poor season. One, I don't think we used him as we should use him. A lot of the time we were finding that we weren't putting the ball onto his head in the box. He's a good player, you know, with the ball at his feet as well. But, you know, his strength is getting the ball in the box at head height, and he will no doubt finish it. He had a real drop of confidence when he clearly wasn't scoring the goals. I think he's actually only scored 4 goals this season. Real crisis of confidence. And to be honest, at a point in the season, we only had one striker and it was him. I think a lot of teams would have dropped him and tried something different. And the fact that Roy did actually do that, drop Benteke and chose not to play a recognised striker, kind of helped us get out of, or continued to help us get out of position we were in by playing Townsend and Zaha as not so much a front two, but kind of, I guess it's been called a false nine, but it wasn't quite that much, because we were playing with one of Townsend and Zaha up higher, but they were switching an awful lot, and defences didn't know what to do. As centre-backs, they always want to be marking a player and knowing who that player is going to be. But the way Wilf and Andros were playing is that they were switching around all the time and really giving defenders a headache. There were a couple of games where we were found out a little bit and that wasn't quite so effective. But as the season, second half of the season went on particularly, it was clear that Benteke was just not in the right mindset. He really wasn't getting I mean, as a striker, we see it all the time that you just need a bit of luck in front of goal sometimes. And that never really came as the season went on. And I think it's disappointing from both his perspective, because it's, you know, it's a season leaning into a World Cup. It remains to be seen if he gets into the Belgian squad. I think he probably will by default due to Batshuayi, I believe, is injured. So maybe that'll be a good thing for us. Whether he goes in the summer, it's a good question. Do I want him to go? I've been asked that question a few times. I can't believe he would have a season like he has again. I really don't. He's a striker. He's a natural goal scorer, regardless of what we've seen this season. I understand we had some interest from China in the January transfer window. The fact that we only had one striker at that point in time, it would have been absurd to sell him at that point, even though a lot of fans were calling for him to go. He's one of these strikers who I think needs a bit of help, both mentally and not so much physically, because he still puts himself about. He still had an impact in games where he's, a great assist for the goal, for the second goal at Stoke. The first goal at Stoke, the penultimate game of the season. It's not as if he hasn't been of any use. He just hasn't been on the score sheet and where you would expect him to be, and really hasn't had that luck. Fans have been highly critical because of his price tag. I mean, I think we pay 32 million in the end for him. And you know, you'd expect a player of, you know, with that price tag to be scoring goals. But you know, let's face facts, he hasn't asked for that price tag. He's a top class striker. He will come good at some point. I'm kind of hoping that we stick with him for next season. You know, with Hodgson in charge, arm round him a little bit, as he's done a fair bit this season, and maybe just add to our options for next season, so we do have the opportunity to drop him if he's not playing very well. The likelihood is that we may well cash in if we have an offer for him. But personally, I think I'm probably one of few that would like to see him stay, because he scored 17 goals for us last season. He will score goals again, and I can't believe he'll have another poor season like this season, really. Just add to the options up front, which was really our downfall. If you've got an out-of-form striker, you need somebody else to come in and provide that competition, which we just didn't have.
Yeah, you did bring in Sorloth, as well as a couple other names that not many people were familiar with in January. How did they get on at the club?
Yes, Sorloth had a couple of games. I think it's a massive step up from where he was in Norway. The Premier League is a big guy, very very skillful for a big guy. Again, similar mold to Benteke in a way, similar height. We played him out wide a fair bit, wide of a front three, really, so not hugging the touchline as such. We didn't really play him to perhaps his potential. He had one great chance, I can't remember who it was against, where the ball just didn't kind of hold up for him too much, but he was in on goal and the keeper came out. I think he's going to be a decent striker in the Premier League. Whether he's a striker that we perhaps need, or we probably needed him to hit the ground running when he joined us, he's quick. He gets stuck in, puts himself about. But did he score a goal for us? I don't think he did. Or did he score one? I can't remember. I don't think he did. But really, we needed somebody perhaps of a bit more Premier League experience, perhaps. But you know, that's the sort of signing that Roy Hodgson has come good for Roy Hodgson in the past at different clubs that he's been at, particularly West Brom and more to the point Fulham, by bringing in players from other countries, because you know the price tags in this country are absolutely ridiculous. I think there's a price tag handed on one of the Championship players the other day at some ridiculous amount of money, and just because it's, you know, other clubs know that the Premier League clubs have a lot of money because of the TV rights, and you know, they feel like they can command, you know, larger fees because of that. So I think Roy's right. He'll probably be doing something quite similar this summer. Whether Sorloth, I think probably the pressure at the time to find somebody to score goals when Benteke wasn't there, it was probably a little bit too much. You know, somebody of an unknown quantity like Sorloth, as he was, obviously has scored goals where he's been before, but different level completely. So it'd be a good addition to the squad. And obviously people are forgetting that Connor Wickham's been out injured for almost 2 years now, 18 months to 2 years. So he'll be like a new signing. Whether he comes back anything like the player he was before, hopefully he'll be like a new signing. So I would say if we keep those three and get another striker in, we'll have options next season, which we really didn't have this season, which didn't help us.
Yeah, especially during that injury crisis, although, as you mentioned, he was one of the ones affected by it.
Yeah.
We alluded to it earlier, how roughly the season started, and then Hodgson obviously turned things around. Was that proverbially just throwing his arm around the players, or was there something tactically that he did to kind of get the best out of this team?
I think it took time. It wasn't an immediate, you know, as we've seen with other clubs in the Premier League, there, you know, this Premier League, the new manager bounce has happened for different, namely Swansea. It started, but obviously didn't save them ultimately. But we didn't have that with Hodgson. We never really saw it with managers before, particularly Allardyce and Pardew. We never saw that bounce. It was a slow process. We obviously saw the end of Frank de Boer after the 1-0 defeat away at Burnley, which, to be fair, I have to say, the players did everything they could in that game. I think we had 28 efforts on goal in that game. How we lost the game is beyond me. But you know, perhaps looking back, it's a saving grace that result did happen. And obviously Roy Hodgson came in for the game afterwards, which was Southampton at home. We lost 1-0 Southampton in that game, which, you know, Hodgson being appointed during that week, you know, is difficult to, you know, kind of have an impact We've seen it before, the new manager bounce trying to impress the manager, and it was a better performance, but ultimately didn't get any points, and we ended after that game. That was our fifth game, so five games without a win. Then we faced consecutive weeks trips to Manchester, so exactly not what you need when you're in a bad run of form. So we lost heavily to Manchester United, and then heavily to Manchester City. That was seven games, no goals, no wins. And obviously Hodgson had been in charge for three of those games, and a lot of fans are thinking it's continuing like it was under De Boer. But after that, you know, we're going into a game against Chelsea. Nobody expects us to get anything from this game. So I think a lot of people are expecting eight games without a win, and then we'll try and kick on from there and pick up points. A lot of people had us down at that point. But we pulled out the bag in that, against Chelsea. Got a surprise win, courtesy of an own goal and Will Saha scoring the winner. And we kind of didn't look back from there, really. It wasn't plain sailing. It wasn't, you know, all the way up from that point, because obviously we're in a position where, you know, we had to play catch-up a fair bit. But I think we can count ourselves a little bit lucky that the quality in the Premier League perhaps hasn't been like it has been in previous years. Otherwise, we could have been a fair bit adrift at that point. So, yeah, I think we can probably thank our lucky stars a little bit that we weren't adrift by a huge margin. I think Bournemouth were only a couple of points above us, even though, you know, the media news is all about Palace being bottom of the table with no points. But, yeah, after that Chelsea game, they, you know, started seeing some improvement. I think one of the gripes that Palace fans seemed to have was Roy Hodgson didn't really make a lot of substitutions, whether it be tactically or whether it's kind of to prove a point that we had a fairly thin squad of players, and options from the bench were limited, really, just in terms of what impact those players on the bench could have, and whether they were even Premier League quality. So, you know, there could be a mixture there in terms of, you know, the reluctance to do such a thing. But yeah, that Chelsea win was kind of, you know, gave us a fair bit of positivity and thinking, actually, you know, if we go on a run of games, that we could do this. And we did soon after that. We had a run of fixtures which were kind to us in a way that I think that first eight games we played five out of the top six teams. So, yeah, it was a tough start. But we started pulling ourselves out of it, and we got to a point when we got to Christmas where we ended up hosting Manchester City, who hadn't dropped a point all season, I think, and we held them to a 0-0 draw, and that was kind of another shot on the arm as such, and to allow us to push on into the new year.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, he obviously did a fantastic job. As you look forward a little bit to the summer, by the time this is out, the transfer window may actually be open. which players that are currently at this club do you think might be heading out, and what positions do you think you'll be filling?
I have to say, Palace fans had a lot to thank Damien Delaney for, who leaves the club in the summer. One of the players that came up with us, and it's a really nice story actually about Damien Delaney. If fans don't know that he was considering quitting football when he was at Ipswich, had his contract cancelled, then he joined Palace, and kind of the rest is history because we were promoted at the end of that season, and he was one of the real stars of that promotion season. Centre back, really. Got stuck in, and we thought at that point he's going to be one of those players which maybe to step up to the Premier League is beyond him. But to be fair, you know, first two or three seasons in the Premier League, even longer than that, he held his own. I mean, a number of times, I think a couple of games against Chelsea, remember, he marked Diego Costa out of the game on a couple of occasions, and you know, and even similar calibre strikers as well. When you kind of think, actually, you know, you don't actually need pace. You know, you just got you know, a bit of a footballing brain, and even as a centre back, you know, you can read the game well. And always known for the way he could block a ball. He just seemed to be able to be in the right place at the right time to actually do one of those throw yourself at the ball blocks, which became a bit of a trademark for him. But it's a shame to see him go, but obviously age is caught up with him, and you know, we've been our fond farewells at the weekend. So other players from the squad, there's a question mark over Johan Cabaye. Personally, I'd rather see him stay. He's an absolute class player in our midfield, and we miss him when he doesn't play. We've struggled with him a little bit in terms of him being able to make complete a whole 90 minutes, but towards the end of the season he was doing that. And there's a lot of talk. I mean, he's even been seen in Marseille tonight for the Europa League final. Obviously, Marseille, I believe, has got he's a guest at the game more than the Twitter meltdown which has happened tonight about him leaving the club. We know that he's in talks over a new contract, and we're praying that he does stick around, because he's one of those players that really makes a difference in the midfield. He's not, you know, he's not one of those players that shine like that Zaha does, you know, to that extent. But he just does those things in midfield that not many other people can do of, you know, of quality in a Palace squad. And we've got a great squad of players. However, he just does what you expect to, you know, a world class player to do, and he does it with these, which you know, it doesn't become, you know, it becomes difficult to some players. Elsewhere, Joel Ward is in discussion with a new contract. To be fair, don't think Joel Ward's going to be a starter next season for us. A right back slot, I think, is going to be Aaron Wan-Bissaka, who is the youth player that's came through the ranks, and he played 6 or 7 games, and I think his first 4 games were against the top 4, and he was exceptional in those games. So it's great to have that find. Obviously, loan players. Fosu Mensah goes back to United. Didn't really get much of a look in towards the end of the season because of Wan-Bissaka breaking through into the first team. But he had his moments during the season, and we wish him well on his way back to, hopefully he breaks through into United's side. And obviously the other player on loan was Loftus-Cheek, who obviously has been called up to the England squad today, which is fantastic news for him, and great for us as well, because obviously it's, you know, we've seen him playing well all season. It'd be great if we could come to some sort of arrangement with Chelsea to have him back at the Palace, even on loan again, or even permanently. But I think his intentions are that he wants to get into this Chelsea squad, and, you know, there's no reason why he can't get into this Chelsea squad with the way they finish the season. So good luck to him. Elsewhere, obviously there's a question mark about Benteke. He may go elsewhere, but I think that's probably, in terms of potential losses, pretty much it. Obviously, Zaha, always speculation about Zaha. Every summer we have the same speculation. We'll expect more so this summer, because obviously what a fantastic season he's had, probably his best season in the Premier League. And obviously he's scored goals as well, which everyone wants, a player that scores goals in that position. So fingers crossed we can hold on to him. Like I said earlier, he's saying all the right things. Whether he stays remains to be seen, but fingers crossed. You know, he's a Palace man at heart. Hopefully we can tug at those heartstrings a little bit, and we can get another season at least out of him. But wouldn't begrudge him if he moved on, for sure, because absolute class player, and probably the best player outside the top 6 at the moment.
All right, then, looking a little further past this summer, there's been talk of new stadium developments at Crystal Palace. I'm not super familiar with it, but what's going on that front?
Yeah, massive developments. I mean, a lot of clubs do look to move elsewhere and build a brand new stadium. But Palace have, obviously, they've spent a few years looking at the potential options, but they've actually looked to redevelop Selhurst Park, which is going to create a brand new era for Palace. And obviously, people that have been to Selhurst Park, we know that away fans aren't particularly keen on it. But some have actually said that it's a proper old-style ground, close to the pitch. The fans are noisy, as we are most games. I think that's one thing that's really missing from the Premier League is fans that, you know, really do make a noise. But it's the main stand. It's a development which is going to cost between 75 and 100 million. And it's actually going to increase the capacity of the ground from 26,000 to just over 34,000. So it's going to overhaul the stadium. And we've been at Selhurst since 1924. So, you know, it's our home. It's a place that you know, fans are familiar with, and it'll be a real wrench to leave. The main part of the whole development is going to be a five-story stand, which is the main stand. It's going to be an all-glass front, and it's kind of been designed with the old Crystal Palace in mind. So the old Crystal Palace, if people don't know, was just a massive palace which was built not far away from the grounds. Just made of glass. It was burnt down. I can't remember the whole story, but it was burnt down, which is the reason why it isn't there anymore. But it was a massive palace made of glass, built in the, I can't remember how far back it was built, but it's obviously gives the name to the area, and obviously palace as well. So it's got a lot of historical reference in terms of the way it's been designed. And it's going to be fantastic. I mean, like I say, five story. Obviously, there's a lot around the business side, the entertainment side, the catering side, and obviously to improve facilities at the club. We have looked at redeveloping the ground before, but the council haven't really been on Palace's side. But there's been a lot of redevelopment in the area over the last few years, and that's probably a lot to do with the fact that Palace have kind of jumped on that. On the back of that, and kind of thought, well, let's try and get some planning through to do this, and obviously funds as well, with the addition of the two American owners coming into the ground and obviously helping, because I know for a fact, following American sport, that they're both those two owners and the franchises they own in the States are big on the fan experience. Mm. And it's been done at their franchises as well. So while perhaps the teams have taken a little bit of a hit in terms of finance, the actual experience for the fans is very good. And that's not what it's all about. Obviously, you want a successful side at the top of the sport, as well as having that decent stadium. So fingers crossed, we can stick around for the unveiling in a couple of years, still a Premier League side. But obviously, I think a lot of fans are exceptionally pleased with this, because it is kind of a legacy from our term in the Premier League. It would be a travesty to be relegated from the Premier League and not have anything to show for it, other than the memories of being in the Premier League and a few changes here and there around the ground. This will be exactly that. It's the longest stay we've had in the Premier League. We're going to be entering next season our sixth consecutive season in the Premier League, and that's a club record. So it's going to be great looking forward to this being developed and to it being unveiled. It's going to be a real addition to the club, and obviously set us into a new era, hopefully.
Cool. Well, it sounds like the future is bright for Crystal Palace. If people would like to keep updates on that, where can they find you?
Yeah, well, head on over to the website, theeaglesbeak.com is where we are. We haven't actually got an article online about the stay and development yet. It's something we thought we'd leave to the summer with the season ending thick and fast with the games coming at us. But we're on Twitter. We're always active on Twitter. So we're always chat to opposition fans, our own fans, and we'll be active all the way through the summer with the World Cup as well. So you can get us on Twitter at theeaglesbeak.
All right, thanks so much for joining us today. It was a pleasure as always. Great having you on throughout the season, and I'm sure we'll speak soon.
Cheers, Kev. Thanks very much.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.